Well, welcome to Mental Health Radio. Take it from us, and that's our theme music just fading out from Joe Cocker's Respect Yourself. I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and we're brought to you and funded by Ember Wellbeing Trust. I hope that you're seeing Ember out in the mental health community now. It's our Framework and Connect. It is the result of a merger between Framework and Connect, and I think slowly both Connect and Framework names are disappearing and being replaced very strongly by Ember. Today we bring you an edited interview from a broadcast which was first brought to listeners in March 2017. At that time, our guest was passionate about rebuilding her life after the demon drink got a hold on her and she dabbled in dope. Leah, I won't use her surname, says in the interview that adventure was a huge part of her life for her first 35 years. But today she's adopted a more compassionate and caring approach to herself and others. Leah wants to showcase herself as someone with the courage to make changes. And boy, that's a big deal, I think, making changes. So often we just stick to the same thing that we've done all along. And of course, the outcome is going to be the same thing that we've got all along. What's the saying, Declan?
Well, what is it? If you're always
do what you've always done,
yeah,
you'll always get.
Yeah, what you've always wanted. That's the one. But I mean, I was just going to say that, you know, it's a difficult thing though to change what your mind does. And a lot of people say, I don't want to do this. But as I've gone through changes, I look at, okay, where do I want to be? So that there's somewhere for me to go to rather than my mind saying, well, okay, you've told me you don't want to do this, but what do you want to replace it with?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're going to listen to this edited version of Leah's original interview. It's right here on USB.
Yeah, it all comes down to self-care. And for me, I'm very driven and passionate. And I can see that I will put myself second. And in doing that, it creates an imbalance in my life. So as a driven, focused woman, I've really had to learn to step back. And I'm continuously doing that every single day because I get wound up on my own hamster wheel, really.
Well, that's a wonderful image, isn't it? Being wound up in your own hamster wheel. We'll have to talk about that a little bit later. But let's start where we agreed we were going to start, because I think over coffee this week, we've already mentioned having that coffee down the road in Point Chef. You said as a kid that you saw the drugs and alcohol was a way to have fun. How and where did you learn such a message?
Well, I grew up here in beautiful New Zealand, and in the culture that I grew up in, it was very synonymous with my parents growing up at the same time. And so when, as a young child, I learnt that when my parents were happy and everything was running smoothly, there was something associated with that, which was alcohol and drugs. So that pattern was ingrained in me. I also have that gene which runs through my blood and the environment. So it made it a perfect nestling space for me to feel somewhat, to identify with that is my world and that's what works.
I mean, when you say you've got that gene, do you mean that you feel that you inherited an addictive sort of gene?
Yeah, and I don't want to place blame at all on, you know, poor on me. It came from a gene of mine. It just is. It's a gene that's been passed down through my ancestors, knowing that with their history, they've had problems with mainly alcohol. And so it is. That is what it is.
Well, we say in mental health that there's a 20% chance that you're going to inherit any mental health issues from your parents. So I guess there's nothing very unusual about it. And if your parents were using drugs and alcohol a lot, I mean, what was your sort of,
I guess, understanding about it. Surely you would just accept that this was a normal thing to do and get stuck in.
Yeah, well, it was part of my environment. I didn't have any other way of singing that wasn't the normal, really.
So which of the two, drugs or alcohol, which did you feel were the most scary for you personally?
Personally, after the journey that I've been on, I would say alcohol is definitely my darkest shadow, because alcohol is so socially acceptable that it's on every shelf as you go into the supermarket, and acceptable in the sense of social environment, it's easy to get. Where drugs, say marijuana, it's still illegal, so therefore it's something that is on the other side, and I would have to go looking for it per se.
So when did you start drinking?
Interestingly enough, I had this conversation with a friend the other day. I remember I was 13 years old. But again, growing up in that environment, I would have sips of my dad's beer. So, you know, as a young kid, that was, have a sip of dad's beer. But the first time I ever grabbed a bottle of wine was 13 years old.
Right. Well, we had a mother in the studio here not so long ago talking about addiction and wanting to promote an addiction conference, actually, that was on March the 18th in Albany. And she said that she had a very strong-willed daughter who somehow ended up at a party, tried pee at the age of 11, thought that she could manage it, didn't manage it at all, and became very severely addicted. I mean, it's very young, isn't it, to be experimenting, 11 or 13 in your case. What was your perception of alcohol then? I mean, did you know that it was a drug?
I don't know that I actually put any perception around it at all, because it was so accepting. It was there. I didn't actually like the taste of alcohol. I never have. And
never have.
No.
Really?
It's really interesting, eh?
How did you get to drink so much?
I know. It was probably trying to fill the void, or it was escapism, and it was the feel good that I got, the high that I got from alcohol. Like I said, at 13, when I had that first bottle of wine, it was to fill the void of not feeling enough. Not feeling worthy enough. My parents had gone through a divorce. I had just lost two friends to suicide and one to drink driving. So at a very vulnerable age, the alcohol seemed like when I picked up that bottle, it was something to, my dad does it, my mum does it, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try this. And it tasted disgusting.
And yet you'd lost a friend to somebody who had been drinking and driving.
Yeah.
Killed themselves, perhaps?
Yes, a friend of mine, Julia, lost her life in a car accident at 13 years old. And what surrounded that was quite a traumatic time for me, with everything else going on in my life. There was no support given, and that's, again, nothing to blame on my parents. It's just, it wasn't acknowledged of what my needs were. And so to go ahead and do something unruly, if you will, or scary with my friend, let's get a bottle of wine, it seemed very natural.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty tough experience that you were going through. You'd lost this girlfriend. She was only 13 when she was killed in a drink driving accident.
Yes.
And you mentioned that two people had committed suicide. Your parents had broken up.
So one person committed suicide, my good friend Mana, and my parents had divorced. So there was a lot of change in my life that was happening.
But
there was support through the school. A couple of support groups were put forth for the girls and myself. Not what I've experienced now. So not what I've seen that's been offered now out there and the awareness that's around suicide prevention and or working with grief.
Did you feel grief as a 13-year-old? Did you know what it was?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I really acknowledged it. I mean, we went to the funerals and obviously there was grief at the funerals, but apart from that, I think it was a very much a mentality for me, being the eldest child, was pull your socks up and keep on going, keep moving forward. I was quite a resilient child, and so therefore it was, I guess I came to a point of accepting that is what it is, and then we just keep on growing and moving up, really.
Sort of sounds like, you know, just harden up and harden up and get on with it.
Yeah,
it's regarded now as not the most helpful advice to anybody who's in grief or whose mental health might be a little vulnerable, and it would be understandable. Did you feel that your mental health was under threat?
No, Sheldon, I haven't, you know, really identified with this until years and years later. It's not something that, even though my mum has worked in mental health and I hear the language that she uses and the way that she has processed things, I've always really admired that. But I wasn't around my mum enough to actually learn from it, because I left New Zealand at such a young age that I basically set off and ran away from any acknowledgements of grief or needing to process anything that had scarred me, really.
So this move overseas, it sounds as though it was a sort of an escape.
Yes, definitely.
And what was the form of that move overseas? Was that involved with sailing and boating and that sort of thing, was it? Or was it just a take off? And
it was 17 years old. I'm out of this country. I'm either going to end up pregnant, addicted to drugs and alcohol, or stagnant in a place where my sense of self was, I need to succeed. I need to succeed and do something with my life. So it was very much ambitious.
And you've described yourself as adventurous, driven, yeah. Like the mouse on the, remind me
yeah,
again.
Yeah, the hamster on the wheel, for
the
sure.
The hamster on the wheel, yeah. So where did this desire at 17 to take off, leave New Zealand, go overseas, where did that take you?
It took me to Australia first, where I went and worked in the hospitality industry and the adventure industry as well. So I was working in river rafting, and then I went and decided that since I lived on the Great Barrier Reef, I better get on the yachts. So I just took my hospitality knowledge and went and worked on the yachts, and then from there moved and set sail to America.
So that was the start of what, a big adventure? That how long did that last?
Gosh, so I came back to New Zealand in 2012.
We're talking to Leah Dowdle about her life, with alcohol, but obviously not just with alcohol, with all sorts of other adventures as well, Leah. You've just recounted how you came back to New Zealand some time ago. But while you were... well, I guess you were involved in the hospitality industry on big boats, big yachts and that sort of thing. Was alcohol a factor during those years?
Oh, of course it was. Yeah, alcohol and the working on the super yachts goes hand in hand, pretty much. It's work hard, party hard. You make a heck of a lot of money. Being in beautiful, adventurous, different places at different times. And with that, if you're not smart enough to be putting that money away, it's going right down to the bar and having a good time.
Right, down the drain.
Yeah, down the drain, or up the wall.
So what was your experience with saving money?
Oh, terrible. It was terrible. I mean, I was trying to send money back to New Zealand in drips and drabs, but I was very spontaneous in my lifestyle, and it was pretty much spend the money on looking fine and drinking wine, really.
Well, looking fine and drinking wine and being the hamster on the wheel.
Yeah.
It sounds as though it could have a catastrophic ending.
Yeah, hence why I'm sitting here talking to you today.
Right, so when did things sort of turn around? Did it take coming back to New Zealand to have a realisation that maybe you might be addicted to alcohol?
Yeah, it did. I've always had an innate sense, because my dad's an alcoholic, so I've had an innate sense of what it looks like and what I didn't want to turn into. So from all of my running away and continuing this movement forward so I didn't have to look at myself, created that environment for doing a move from the States back to New Zealand to pretty much find some balance and get myself together. But it still took a couple of years of being back here. It wasn't until 2015 that I basically found the gift of desperation and couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't live the double life of the selling and showing myself in one sense and then behind closed doors drinking to escape. Really?
You just used the phrase, the gift of desperation.
Mm.
That seems like a conflict, that desperation is hardly a gift. But in your case, are you saying that you got to a desperate stage and that made you realise that you needed to do something?
Yeah, it really did. It was to that point of live or die. And so the gift was, do I either continue down this path of probably death, or do I have the courage to make a change? And it was really, really hard. It is the hardest thing I've ever had to do, actually.
So what were the first steps in that you recognised that, well, if you carried on the way you were going, you probably were going to end it all? So it was more than just your description to me over coffee that you toppled off your perch. It sounds even more serious than that.
Yeah, if I'm really honest with myself, then I had to acknowledge, it actually came back down to my children. And I had to acknowledge that in the environment that I was creating and the insanity of doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, was I was actually putting them into the environment that I'd grown up with. And so therefore desensitizing them to what was becoming normal for them. Run from your emotions. Don't acknowledge that you're in pain and use a substance to counter that. And so when I looked into their eyes, I knew that if I didn't change, there wasn't going to be any change. I wasn't going to break the chain that had been handed down through generations to me, really. Yeah, the pain of realization that I was so incongruent and that falseness that I felt started to create a hatred within myself. And I could, being a person that comes from promoting health and wellness, which was my industry, I could feel it in my gut. And I knew that that was the symptoms of starting a disease, which was my disease of alcoholism, that allergy that comes with it. But it was also a dis-ease in my soul, in my psyche.
Discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a real conflict that was developing in you. Is that part of the desperation that you describe?
Yeah, it was. It was a desperation. I mean, you can call out to your higher power, your God of your own understanding, as many times as you can. I used to sit out under the stars with a glass of wine saying, I just pray for health and happiness. And, you know, my higher power was saying, well, girl, you know,
drop the glass of wine.
Yeah, you've got to make a change. If you're not going to, you know, I'm not going to help you until you make that change. And the courage is stepping forth and stepping into the light, really.
Lee. We're talking to Leah Dowdle about her journey with the glass of wine, I guess. What step was it? What was the critical step that you took? You were sitting under the stars. You were calling on your higher power, but you still had the glass of wine in your hand. So I guess you wanted the best of both worlds. Surely there was something else that you needed to do, a step that you needed to take.
Yeah, and it was really hard. I had to remove myself from my environment, which meant that I had to leave my husband at the time, and I had to leave my children. I actually had to physically remove myself from the environment to go and seek help.
And did you do that by... you shifted towns, maybe you came to Auckland where there is a fair degree of support for alcohol addiction?
Yes, I did. So it still took me a few more months because I was in great denial, and I was still going to go down the avenues of trying all these different alternative therapies because I wasn't ready to accept and label myself. I still have a hard time labeling myself now, only over my own stigmatism. But after a few months of being out of that environment, I came to the realisation that I was going to have to seek help through a rehabilitation centre here in Auckland. And I really owe my life and where I sit now to the services that have been offered here in Auckland. I have such a passion to give back to the services through what I can offer in my field and the tools and skills that I have to those that are suffering from mental health and or addiction.
Do you want to name any of those particular services and credit them with where you've got to today?
Oh, yeah, of course. Higher Ground is an amazing facility. And for a place here in the South Pacific that offers 4.5 months of treatment that does psychotherapy work within the underlying patterns, because the alcohol and addiction is only the surface of what lays beneath. And what laid beneath for me is the grief and the abandonment of that 13-year-old young girl. And Wings Trust as a pre and post therapeutic community for those going into treatment and then exiting out of treatment. I would have to say my greatest work has actually been bringing myself out of Higher Ground and into Wings and having that support of other people in the therapeutic community. The greatest step that you can take is going to be one of your own fruition. So you need to make that step because nobody can tell you. So you have to have that courage to stand up, put your toe in the ground and take that step forth. So it was scary, but I did it. I had to. I had to because maybe that drive inside me, it comes from a place of ego as well and wanting the best out of my life. I'm really blessed to be able to utilise the services of Drive Connect down South Auckland and also CareNZ. Once in this community, there's so many aspects to it that offer these different workshops or programs that those people can come together at, like the Drive weekend that we were just in. And I came into that through Denise Omar, who I believe you've had on your show as well. And she suggested that I come down and teach a yoga class. Because I'm wanting to blend the yoga with addiction and how to come back into the body, I was able to present that class in a way that takes the stigma of yoga, actually, that it's only for, you know, it's an elitist practice, or it's for people only in spandex, and bring it down to a place of everybody can do yoga. If you're breathing, you can do yoga. And for those of us that have had addiction challenges or mental health challenges, to get out of the mind and get into the body is the greatest benefit.
It's the greatest challenge as well.
Yeah, it is a huge challenge, isn't it?
How do we get out of that mind?
And it's through the breath. It's through the linking of the breath, you're finding that mindfulness. And it is really hard to do, but it only has to be in small increments. It can be 1 minute, 2 minute, 5 minutes, building up. But it's about not berating yourself or thinking you're not doing it well enough. It's about making it available to everybody.
Talking today to Leah Dowdle about the rebuilding of her life, and it's been a fascinating story and is a fascinating story, but how much better is life now than when you were drinking, Leah?
Oh, well, it's not as insane, that's for sure. I definitely have found that balance and balance quality of life. My quality of life is not as insidious with chasing what I think is referred to sometimes as the demons on my shoulders, really. It's about the clarity of what's my life's purpose, what is the ripple effect that this change in my life has created to my loved ones, or what can they benefit from it as well. So there's a lot more integrity in my relationships. There's a lot more love for myself and a lot more awareness that my humility is therefore increased in compassion for myself and therefore others. So a lot more real. It all comes down to self-care. And for me, I'm very driven and passionate, and I can see that I will put myself second. And in doing that, it creates an imbalance in my life. So as a driven, focused woman, I've really had to learn to step back. And I'm continuously doing that every single day because I get wound up on my own hamster wheel, really.
Well, that's a wonderful image, isn't it? Being wound up in your own hamster wheel. We'll have to talk about that a little bit later. But let's start where we agreed we were going to start, because this week we've already mentioned having that coffee down the road in Point Chef. You said as a kid that you saw the drugs and alcohol were the way to have fun. How and where did you learn such a message?
Well, I grew up here in the beautiful.
Yeah, we're back live on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us. Apologies, we just seem to swing back into the start of our interview with Leah, but what a wonderful interview that was. I know that sounds as though I'm being a bit egotistical, but I didn't realise how much fun we had with Leah in her telling us her journey of rebuilding her life after exposure to alcohol from the sort of tender age of 13. And I just am amazed at that wonderful phrase that she got wound up in her own hamster wheel. She also talked about running from our emotions, and I really do suspect that many Kiwis are running from their own emotions. They're not acknowledging them. They're not talking about their emotions. They're not addressing the issues that they may have with other people, which are distressing. We're more inclined to talk to a third party than to go direct to the person that is upsetting us or impacting our emotions and trying to have it out with them. And maybe we don't do that because we are afraid of being attacked or criticised.
I was just going to say that, the risk of being judged. Yeah.
Judged as well. Well, let's take a music break. Declan, what have we got first up today?
Well, it's interesting, actually, because the first one that I chose is called Stumbling In. I was just thinking, you know, if you're drunk sort of thing. Anyways, this one turned out to be by far the biggest American hit for both of these stars. It's got Susie Quattro and Chris Norman in it. And Chris Norman was from the group Smokey, which played Living Next Door to Alice. And I will be bringing that one on at some stage in the near future. You're with Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcast broadcasting to you right here every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM. And here's Stumbling In with Susie Quatro and Chris Norman.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown, and I think it's quite a coincidence that Declan chose Stumbling In, given that we had the edited broadcast with Leah, and I guess there must have been a few occasions where Leah was stumbling in, and the incredible coincidence here is that Declan didn't know the subject matter of that edited broadcast.
No, I didn't. I think my ESP or whatever you call it, intuition, must be working well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And just from Facebook, and this ties in with some of the comments that Leah made, she said that she had to leave her husband, to leave her children in order to get rehabilitation to come back to New Zealand. From Facebook, it says here, don't be afraid to walk away from things, places and people that leave your soul heavy. Now, one of the questions that's entertaining my mind at the moment is, why is living in New Zealand so stressful? And I guess we see evidence of this with the homeless. There was a big report from Rotorua in terms of motels that are being used by the Ministry of Social Development. It's causing conflict with tourists that are staying in those same hotels. There's just a general shortage of housing, of rental accommodation. Obviously in Rotorua, Airbnb has taken over many of the rental opportunities and rental accommodation, because in a tourist town there's probably more money to be gleaned from Airbnb than to have permanent tenants. But this question, why is living in New Zealand so stressful? If there are any listeners that would like to contribute to what is making their life stressful in New Zealand, you could call us. We have some time during Take It From Us today until 1:30. You could call us on 09 815 8100, just to give us some insights into why living in New Zealand is so stressful. So we'd really look forward to those calls on 09 815 8100. But in the meantime, I've got a post here from the Australian and New Zealand Mental Health Organisation. It says that journaling can help you with mental toughness. To live a life with a healthy mind and body, mental toughness is an integral element. And mental toughness is described here as the ability to resist, manage, and overcome doubts, worries, and concerns. On the other side, weak mental toughness prevents us from accomplishing tasks and approaching towards an objective that you have set out. This issue of needs to be addressed. This issue needs to be addressed, as it is estimated that around 45% of Australian people will experience a mental health issue in their lifetime. And I think that figure of 45% is about the same here in New Zealand. Journaling is a new concept in human psychology. It allows people to clarify their thoughts and expressions, hence achieving valuable self-awareness. It is a tremendous problem-solving approach. Many times, an individual can overcome a problem and come up with solutions more conveniently on paper. And it says here that journaling enhances mental toughness. Journaling is one of the most effective but unfortunately also most understated solutions to strengthen mental toughness. It helps in many aspects to deal with our day-to-day concerns and even major traumatic problems. So it can help us manage anxiety. One of the most useful things you can do to manage anxiety is by keeping a written record of your thoughts on paper. As people are facing hardships every day, there are ways to soothe anxiety by journaling and writing a few words as a description. And our guest, Leah, has adopted yoga, is a yoga practitioner and teacher, and also talked very much about breathing. And I'm certainly a great supporter of good breathing, as I have stated on Take It From Us a number of times. The last time I had to see a psychologist, she recommended that I do 15 minutes of deep breathing as soon as I get into bed, and 15 minutes of deep breathing before I get out of bed after I've woken up. To work with your thoughts and to modify them, you need to write down any thought you have, whether in impatience or during a condition which causes anxiety. Journaling is also a stress reducer. It can be a great stress reducer through constructing your thoughts, clearing your mind, and it helps in problem solving. It helps you to escape and pushes you to forget everything else by just focusing on yourself. journaling helps a person to reduce stress levels by improving themselves to get rid of negative thoughts. It is the best way to clear your thoughts and get in touch with your feelings to curtail stress. It can also weaken the state of depression. According to the World Health Organization, depression is one of the leading causes of disability worldwide. It is a threatening fact and requires attention to combat the state of depression among people. Many mental health experts recommend the approach of journaling to manage and reduce the symptoms of depression. You may identify that you are worried about something you did not know was depressing, then you can write it down. Journaling, it says, also provides positivity. One of the most significant benefits of journaling is the incredible effects on enhancing your positive attitude. It is human nature that we always tend to remember the negative memories that occur in our lives and neglect all the decisive moments that happen every day. Using journaling to write down every positive thing that is happening throughout the day can bring positivity in your life. I think it's also very important to be grateful for those things that we can be grateful about. It will transfer positivity to your health, relationships, and struggles of life. Journaling also, it says, helps to prioritize. People often get puzzled in setting priorities, which results in tremendous loss, whether financial loss, health loss, or relationship loss. It's not a good habit of just thinking about your priorities and not writing them down and planning accordingly. So let's take another music break. Declan, you said you've got another track there.
I've got something for the younger ones, like me, young at heart, whatever, you know, Gary. it's by actually a German DJ guy, and his name is Robin Schultz, and it features Harlow. Never heard of that one before, but it's called All This Love, and you're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio. We broadcast here every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM.
2 a.m. in this cheap hotel, a little bit of space without a seat. Now I see. On the bed and I close my eyes, think about those perfect nights in Phoenix. Still feel it, but there's no relief. It's weighing on me, it's taking its toll. It's not letting go. And if we do, and if we do, sometimes I wonder if we do it all along. So what are we gonna do with all this love?
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And we're looking forward to some calls on this subject of why living in New Zealand is so stressful. You can call us on 09 815 8100, or if you prefer not to call, you could write an email to me, sheldon.brown@ember.org.nz. That's the new email address, my new email address. I'd really enjoy receiving some contributions about why living in New Zealand is so stressful, because I'm confused that we have such a beautiful country. We have opportunity. We are supposedly a developed nation, and yet it does appear that living in New Zealand is very stressful. We have a very high suicide rate, which was again mentioned on the news on TV3 recently, quoting the fact that 668 people died from suicide in the latest provisional figures that came out last year. And that's a huge proportion, and within that large number, about a third are Maori, and so that's of its own concern. So today I was just talking about the benefits of journaling, and it says to live a life with a healthy mind and body, mental toughness is an integral element. It is the ability to resist, manage, and overcome doubts, worries, and concerns. And so this article from the Australian and New Zealand Mental Health Organisation is singing the praises of journaling to help us with our mental toughnesses. And it's recommending some practices for effective journaling. It says here, journaling is the best method to overcome reluctance and to strengthen mental toughness. So some of those practices for effective journaling involves writing every day. Now, it says this is a very straightforward practice. As a like medication, you cannot miss it out for a single day. Make your best effort to write every day. And then it, under a heading, taking an easy approach, it says the idea is that you don't overburden yourself. Keep your strategy simple. Write in plain words. Don't use heavy vocabulary, as the purpose is to express your real emotion. Then it says write what's in your mind. You need to write to review your thoughts. Bring all the reflections in your mind into the journal. Be open to yourself for better realization of your mentality. And I guess one of the obstructions that really stands in the way of recovery and rehabilitation is this situation of denying that we have a mental health issue at all. And I was talking to somebody this morning whose daughter seems to be in denial, looking for a physical reason for how she is feeling, rather than addressing an issue perhaps of mental health. And so that whole issue of denial is a barrier to us moving forward and really achieving well-being. So learn from what you write. This is the final aspect. The concept behind journaling is that you learn from what you write. If you write all that's inside your mind, it can be your best mentor, as experience is the mother of wisdom. So some food for thought. After discussing all aspects of journaling in regards to mental toughness, we will come to a conclusion as food for thought for you. Maintaining a journal helps you encounter mental stress when things are not in your control. Arrange any time of day for yourself and write your genuine and sincere feelings as healing for your miseries. With the right approach and mindset, it will help you to enhance your mental toughness at maximum limits. And I think in journaling, as I said, gratitude, being grateful for some of the things that may happen, some of the positive things that may happen. And I've got another little phrase from Facebook that I found during the week, and it says, somebody didn't wake up today, but you did. That's enough reason to stop complaining, and that's enough to be thankful for. Never let your troubles blind you to your daily blessings. And I'm going to read that again. Somebody didn't wake up today, but you did. That's enough reason to stop complaining, and that's enough to be thankful for. Never let your troubles blind you to your daily blessings. So I think that underlines, firstly, recognizing the daily blessings that we may have. That might be a roof over our heads. It might be some good food. It might be a connection with people. It might be a really lovely, emotional, deep discussion with somebody, which I had the luxury of enjoying today. And also the compliment that this person called me and asked me, I guess, for a little bit of advice, for a little bit of support about her daughter. So let's take another music break, but that gratitude. I think every time I get a green light when I'm driving my car, sometimes there's a long period when the light stays green, and it stays green and I get through, and I often just say, well, thank you. And, you know, I think it helps my positivity and generally my better emotions. So
now, what I was going to say with people calling in on 815-8100, so we're nice and gentle to you. We've got about a 4-minute song coming up, so I thought if you want to ring and you don't want to talk on here, Sheldon can have a chat to you off here.
Not a good idea.
Don't be shy. Okay, this song it was actually a demo that every record company rejected in 85 and 86. Marx eventually, you know who it is now probably, Richard Marx eventually signed with EMI Manhattan Records in 1986. And the song is Endless Summer Nights by Richard Marx. You're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here every single Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM.
I'm
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And Hearts and Minds on the North Shore, or certainly right up to Rodney and throughout Waitakere, they are advertising their new group of wellbeing and resilience groups. It's the third term. These run between August to September this year, and participants must be 18 years or over and either live in the Waitemata District Health Board catchment area or access health services in that area. So this is Hearts and Minds. They're offering groups such as managing depression and anxiety, taming emotions. There are courses for Mandarin speakers for managing stress and distress. There's also a group for global food and friends where everyone is welcome. And this is going to run on Wednesdays from 10:30 to 12:30. You could inquire info at heartsandminds.org.nz for that particular one. Or generally their website will have all this information, heartsandminds.org.nz. So some really interesting groups. Addressing mental health issues like emotional stress, finding balance, managing anxiety, strengthening one's self-esteem, calming your anxious mind, and even some art therapy as well. So there's our theme music. This has been taken from us for another Tuesday. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back next Tuesday at 12:30.
I got a cheeky smirk. Have a good one. We'll see you next week. Everybody's